Hello. Okay, I might get called away at some point here, but I'm gonna try and get in a chapter. If I get called away, I'll come back later and finish Harry Potter and the Secret Enemy. By the Sinister Man. Read by Sam Gabriel. Chapter 1. The Lessons of Summer. 1 July 1992. Harry Potter stared at the telephone on his work desk with a vague distrust. Although technically Muggle-raised, his time spent with the Dursleys had left him ill-equipped to deal with many aspects of Muggle existence. In this instance, while he, unlike most purebloods, knew what a telephone was, he had never actually used one in his entire life, and he was now oddly nervous as a result. However, his nervousness was outweighed by his frustration over the fact that not one of his friends had owled him any letters so far, not even to respond to those he'd sent out. It was annoying. Finally, the boy took a deep breath and dialed the number in front of him, and after a few rings, a female voice answered.
Granger Residence? Good afternoon, Miss Granger. My name is Harry Potter, and I'm a schoolmate of Hermione. By any chance, is she available? Harry Potter? You were the young man at the station, weren't you?
For a second, Harry thought that...
Harry Potter? You were the young man at the station, weren't you?
For a second, Harry thought the woman's voice seemed to register... For a second, Harry thought the woman's voice seemed to register disapproval. Then he shook his head. He was just imagining things.
Just a moment, she said.
Harry could hear Hermione's mother move away from the phone and then call out to her daughter. Seconds later, there was the sound of running feet and then a squeal that almost made Harry drop the receiver.
Harry Potter, where have you been? We've all been worried sick about you. We've all been worried sick about you.
Harry was surprised by the sudden out. Harry was surprised by the unexpected outburst.
You have? And who's we? Neville, Blaze, and myself. Oh, and Theo, though I only hear from him secondhand through Blaze. Apparently he's very paranoid about sending owls to and from Malfoy Manor. Understandable, I suppose. But anyway, we've all been sending you outposts for... But anyway, we've all been sending you outposts for...
Okay, I gotta... Let's find out if Sinister's in the call. He is. Sinister, I have a question for you. More of a quibble. That is not how you use the phrase outposts. And I this is the only time I remember seeing this mistake. Like, outpost is used in the same way you would use the words the postal service. It would be like a letter, is what you would, or just owls. Yeah. Or like you could use the phrase to mean like, because it's like you know that there's the I believe book three the chapter title of canon book three is like Owlpost, and then the last chapter is called Owlpost again, and it's just like it's like the concept of owls delivering things is what that means. I would say, but anyway, we've all been sending you owls. Which is actually, you use that phrasing in the previous sentence as well, and you continue using that phrasing all through the rest of this. So I was guessing it was just a mistake. But yeah, anyway, there we go. Woohoo! All right.
Understandable, I suppose, but anyway, we've all been sending you owls for 2 weeks now and haven't heard anything from you. Blaze has been threatening to send Gunther to kick in the Dursley's door and rescue you. She paused. You didn't actually need rescuing, did you? I'll never hear the end of it if you did and I talked Blaze out of saving you in some dramatic fashion. Harry laughed. Oh, I haven't needed saving. It's just been boring and lonely here. It's rather odd because I've been sending owls out to you a lot as well and never heard back from anyone. Posts to and from my solicitors get through fine, but nothing from any fellow students I've written to. Dumbledore was supposed to have put up some wards here when I was first dropped off. Maybe he included a post owl ward or some such nonsense. Anyway, I'll have Hestia and Artio look into it now that I know that it's an actual thing and not everyone just ignoring me.
He laughed at that. In the meantime, could you owl Blaze and Neville and
let them know I'm okay and it's just an issue with owl delivery?
Of course, Hermione replied.
Though Neville is out of country at the moment, he and Lady Augusta are in the Amazonian jungle on an expedition to find some rare plant specimens. They won't be back until the 15th, and I doubt an owl could find him before then. Anyway, other than a lack of communication, how has your summer been?
Not bad. I finished my homework, and I have my own TV for the first time in my life, but there never seems to be anything...
good on, so I don't know that I missed much. I don't have to cook for anyone but myself, although I'm getting a bit tired of cold sandwiches and ramen noodles cooked in a microwave. On the bright side, I start tutoring tomorrow. I'm a bit excited about that.
Tutoring? But we can't use our wands during the summer, can we? Hermione asked.
Well, as is usually the case, there are loopholes put in place for the benefit of the rich and well-connected that are big enough to drive a lorry through them. There's a license you can apply for from the Ministry that lets you use your wand over the summer for limited... There's a license you can apply for from the Ministry that lets you use your wand over the summer for limited times, provided you're supervised by an adult who gets Ministry approval. My solicitors got it set up for me. They don't mention it at Hogwarts because it's bloody expensive, and I guess they don't want the less wealthy parents to complain about the inherent unfairness of it all.
I wrote you all about it in one of those letters that disappeared into the netherworld or whatever.
How expensive are we talking, Harry? Don't say bloody, it's impolite.
I've missed you, Hermione. Anyway, all told, I'm dropping nearly 2,000 galleons on tutoring this summer.
I reckon that's close to £10,000. Not all school-related stuff, though. I'm also learning about politics, etiquette, estate planning, and also flying lessons at some point.
£10,000?
Oh God, I can't go eep. I'm just gonna try. No, I literally, it's just gonna sound stupid. It's just gonna sound. I'm just gonna say eesh. I'm just gonna say eesh. I can't say eep. I'll try for everyone's amusement. I'll try.
£10,000 eep.
No, I can't do it. I can't do it. I think a girl could pull that off. I think if you have a high voice.
Mimble, mimble. You know, yeah. I mean, you know, it's like a weird approximation. But like, eek was one I ran into in a previous audiobook. And girls say eek, like even the girl at the time was sort of like putting it on a little bit, but also kind of not all the way putting it on. So it's like eek. Like it just, you know, I can do a voice that sounds feminine, but I can't. That just requires that you have a high voice. Otherwise, you just can't do it. But yeah. Yeah.
10,000 pounds each. No. 10,000 pounds each. Well, if it's all the same, I think I'll stick to sound. Well, if it's all the same, I think I'll stick to still. Yeah. Well, if it's all the same, I think I'll stick to self. Well, if it's all the same, I think I'll stick to self-study for now. If I can't keep up with you, not to mention all the. If I can't keep up with you, not to mention all the purebloods like Malfoy, who are probably getting tutoring as well, I'll talk to my parents for next summer. Besides, we've already made plans to go to France for 3 weeks, so I probably won't. Besides, we've already made plans to go to France for 3 weeks, so I probably wouldn't have time anyway. So what's your tutor like? No idea. I haven't actually met her yet. She's a Hufflepuff who graduated near the top of her class. She's got a gap year before she starts at the Aurora Academy and wants to make a little spending money. Her name is Tonks. Just Tonks? Just Tonks. According to Artie, she has a... According to Artie, she has a first name, but she doesn't like it, so she just uses a surname for everything, not even a miss in front of it. So, Tonks, then, like Madonna or Cher. Nope, sorry, no idea who either of them are. Raised in a boot cupboard, remember? Hermione sighed. She knew Harry's occasionally shocking black humor masked a lot of pain and bitterness, but But phone conferences were not the proper setting to talk to him seriously about it, so she... But phone conferences were not the proper setting to talk to him seriously about it, so she decided not to rise to the bait. But from now on, Harry, just leave the... television on MTV while you study. You can absorb the entirety of Muggle pop culture through osmosis. He laughed. And before I forget, will you be back in London for the 31st? That's my birthday, and I'd like to do, well, something. I don't want a party, really, but maybe me, you, Neville, and Blaze could take in a movie or something. I'd love to. I'll forward the invitation to Blaze and Neville. She hesitated. I should tell you, your parents sent me an invitation to a birthday party for Jim at Porter Manor for the 31st. I haven't responded yet. Were you interested in going? Had you not wanted to do something that day, I might have considered it. I mean, he is in my house, so we do need to at least try to get along. And if I can make peace with Draco Malfoy, surely I can do it with Jim Potter. I'd rather spend the day with you, and I'm sure Neville will feel the same. Harry was pleased and immediately started. Harry was pleased and immediately started counting the days to when he'd see his friends again. 2 July, 1992. Late the next afternoon, Harry locked and bolted the main door to his room. Then he exited out the invisible magic door in his back wall and went down the invisible magic stairs, both of which had been installed just weeks before. For about the 100th time in the last year, he grinned infectiously at the possibilities of magic. Then he walked around to the front of the house and stopped short, his smile falling away. Petunia was in the front yard, wearing a silly-looking broad-brimmed hat and armed with a pair of garden shears that she was using to brutally mutilate an innocent rosebush. For a second, Harry felt a pang of sadness. As much as he'd hated being the Dursley's slave and whipping boy for so many years, he took justifiable pride in how much he'd maintained Petunia's award-winning flower garden, just as he took pride in how well he'd cooked meals for his three hateful relatives, elaborate, fancy meals which they'd all slurped down without even a single...
Elaborate, fancy meals, which they'd all slurped down without even a single compliment. Briefly, he'd considered the idea of offering to... Briefly, he'd considered the idea of offering to cook meals downstairs on occasion, but only with the understanding that he'd be allowed to eat his fair share and sit at the table. But only with the understanding that he'd be allowed to eat his fair share and sit at the table like a proper person. No more of this cook beef Wellington for the Dursleys while living off burnt toast and tap water rubbish. He mentioned the idea to Hermione on the phone the day before, and she'd rather hotly explained to him about a muggle concept called Stockholm Syndrome that caused kidnapping victims to feel a desire to please their captors. Petunia glanced up at him and made a face of undisguised loathing. Then she went back to Harry's poor roses and attacked them with renewed vigor. With the tiniest amount of regret, for the roses, not their assailant, Harry walked past Petunia to the sidewalk and headed down the street. A few blocks away from 4 Privet Drive, Harry looked around to make sure no one was on the street watching him. Then he pulled out his wand and held it out in a thumbs-up gesture, just as Artie had demonstrated. Seconds later, he was startled by the sudden arrival of a bright red triple-decker bus, the night bus.
I kind of remember this being patched, but or at some point, the night bus is definitely purple. Was it your intention to change it? Okay. Yeah. Okay, cool. I recalled it changing at some point, but I wasn't sure that I actually was, but yeah. Yeah. I think, well, because I mean, like the first Harry Potter. Actually, okay, this is kind of funny. I'll go off on a little bit of a tangent. The first Harry Potter book I read was 3. My 7th grade English teacher had one copy of each book that she kept and lent out to students whenever they wanted to read them, and that was the one that was available when I wanted to borrow one. So I didn't entirely understand everything, and I remember the night bus very, very, very well, just because that's like the first really magical thing that you see in book 3, apart from like inflatable Aunt Marge, but like it's the other thing that I didn't get. I mean, like, I was, of course, mispronouncing everyone's name in my head. I was going with, like, Sirius and, like, Hermione and, like, all those classic mistakes. But I also thought that Hagrid was a skinny, hard-bitten old woman. And I don't know how I fucked that up. Because I don't think he isn't described. Now, there aren't any pictures of him. There's a picture in one of the chapter illustrations in the first book is a picture of Hagrid, but he doesn't appear in any of the illustrations of book 3. And I'm sure it's mentioned that he's big or whatever, and I'm sure he's called he all the fucking time. But yeah, I just missed it somehow. Because Hagrid sounded like a woman's name to me. And I honestly would be a little bit surprised if he's ever really referred to as Rubeus Hagrid in book 3. He's probably is occasionally, but he's normally just Hagrid. But yeah, so it was like, you know, they're going to execute Buckbeak is what I was thinking in my head. Yeah. I think he introduces himself as Rubeus Hagrid, Keeper of Keys and Grounds at Hogwarts in the first book. I think. I could be wrong about that, but if he's saying his title, I'm sure he says his full name as well. Yeah. Anyway, back to the text.
Seconds later, he was startled by the sudden arrival of a bright red triple-decker bus, the night bus. Amused by the bus's appearance and by the nervous introduction of one Stan Shunpike, apparently it was young Shunpike's first week on the job as bus conductor, Harry announced his destination as the Leaky Cauldron. Harry announced his destination as the Leaky Cauldron and then settled it. Harry announced his destination as the Leaky Cauldron and then settled in for a quick, if mildly terrifying, ride. Not long after, a somewhat nauseous Harry. Not long after, a somewhat nauseous Harry Potter stepped off the bus and into the Leaky Cauldron, making his way upstairs to room 13, which was a small but heavily warded meeting room that Artie Podmore's firm kept permanently rented out for private conferences such as this. Inside, Podmore and two other wizards were waiting for him. "Good afternoon, Harry," said Artie. "Any problems getting here?"
Not at all, Artie, thanks.
Harry looked expectantly towards the two other men. Harry looked expectantly towards the other two men, both of whom seemed to be defined by how incredibly nondescript and average-looking they were. "Harry, let me introduce... Well, I suppose introduce isn't the right word. Harry, this is Mr. X, and this is Mr. Y." Harry crooked an eyebrow. They are here under glamours and anonymity charms to conceal their identities, but both of them have sworn oaths to me that they are the individuals with whom the firm has contracted in this manner, as well as secrecy oaths that they will not reveal the mere fact that you're studying occlumency to anyone else. Likewise, I have sworn an oath not to reveal either of their identities to you or anyone else. Likewise, I have sworn an oath not to reveal either of their identities to you or anyone else. While their actions today are not illegal, they are sufficiently sketchy in the eyes of the Ministry that neither wishes to use his real identity. I assure you that this is quite common where occlumency training is concerned." He gestured towards each man in turn. Mr. X is a seventh level adept at both occlumency and Mr. X is a seventh level adept at both occlumency and legilimency. Mr. Y is a fifth level occlumens and also a licensed and bonded obliviator who normally works for the ministry, but is acting today in a freelance capacity. In just a minute, Mr. Y will use the first part of the memory. In just a minute, Mr. Y will use the first part of the memory lock charm on Mr. X, and then leave the room along with myself. Mr. X will then spend the next hour examining your mind and your memories with legitimacy in order to determine the strength of your occlumency shields, and then he'll provide you with a course of mental exercises designed to improve those shields and to develop other psychic projections. During your session, you will also give Mr. X a password of some kind that will allow him to remember this session in the future. Even if you don't want him to ever remember this session, the nature of the spell requires that a password exist. It doesn't have to be anything complicated, but it should be something that won't come up in casual conversation. At the end of the session, Mr. Y will come back in and use the second part of the memory lock spell on Mr. X to complete the memory block. Harry was rather impressed by the level of secrecy involved in this endeavor. Memory lock charm? I've never heard of that.
What? As each other? As each other? Okay. Yeah, I'm just going to do something generic, but these that they should sound the same as each other. Okay. Okay, yeah. Oh, you mean that Mr. Y should sound like Mr. Shacklebolt or Kingsley. Okay. I actually forgot that Mr. Y was Shacklebolt until you brought him up just now. I'm guessing that you describe him as having a silky voice. I would not describe my voice for Snape as silky. That doesn't mean that you intended him to sound differently. But I think that given that this is an audiobook, there's just no reason to make him sound the same. Yeah, I'll probably just come up with some sort of a different voice for him, like something just generic sounding. Also, that means that I have to get my Shacklebolt down sooner than I thought. I've done him in the King of Rats bit, but no. But I mean, like you know, I can do a boring voice, you know. But yeah, or just a sort of a reedy, like you know, just give him some kind of character that just doesn't make people think that he's Snape. Let's see. I need to do some research on Shacklebolt. Because I just gave him a deep-ass voice, you know, because it's like... Yeah, that guy's pretty much a perfect Shacklebolt. Let's see. Yeah. British actor. Where is he from? Nope. Born. Oh, he was born in Grenada. Huh. Yeah. Okay. I did teach myself a halfway decent Jamaican accent during Alexander Quick that I didn't end up using, but that would probably be a little bit too much. But I mean, MLE has no. There's no way he would speak with MLE. I'm even pushing it, giving it to Blaze. Let's see. Because, like, MLE didn't, like, it didn't really exist in 1992, and when it started existing, it was only spoken by young people. Let me see, just really, really deep, right? Yeah. No. Yeah, it's, yeah, I don't know how responsible it would be to do that anyway, you know, like, there's even, early on in John Dies at the End, there's this black dude at a party who looks stereotypically Jamaican and is clearly putting on a fake Jamaican accent to try to, like, pick up girls, and it's the line... Fuck you, man. Why don't you take your fake ass Jamaican accent back to fake Jamaica or wherever you're from? It's a mess. But I always do think of that. Okay, how the fuck should he sound? It's like, I remember somebody said, oh, your Kingsley was perfect in the King of Rats thing, and I'm like, no, it wasn't. That was a really bad voice. It was just me going, I'm talking deeply now. Like, you know, it was just that. Let's just try it and see what happens. Although, no, though. If I'm giving Snape a different voice, I have to give him a different voice too, right? Like, it's the same magic, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or you mean why? But when is it revealed, and is it revealed before we meet Kingsley in the actual story proper? Oh, okay. That must be why I don't remember it, because I was absorbing so much at the end of year three, and I've only read it once, you know. So I was like, ah, okay. But yeah. Of course, no, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. It's like, oh God, Voldemort's alive, yeah. How much of this did you take from MOR, by the way, the Occlumency instruction? Because it seems like. Oh, sure, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, like, the instruction in this has always just sort of struck me as, oh, it's like how it is in HPMLR, but it's like it's thought out a whole lot better, and it makes a lot more sense, and like, you know, it really has a lot more nuance to it, and like, you know, like the dude, like, because I remember, like, the guy that's instructing him in MLR is like, he's like, the Dark Lord's alive, you know, and it's like he doesn't have a reaction to that, and it's like I would probably want to have some way of knowing, you know, like, anyway, Oh yeah, so that was all just a fucking smokescreen. But like, Also, not to throw shade, you do you. But where did you get Legilimens from? Well, no, well, because it's Legilimens. No, yeah, because remember in movie 5 when, like, prepare yourself, Legilimens, like, it is set. I don't know that I even had a mental pronunciation for it when I first read book 5. Right, yeah, of course. I would imagine that it has more to do with, like, the root word is legible, certainly. Because you're reading their minds, or, well, I mean, yeah, Snape would disagree that it's quite that simple, but yeah. Is this the fic where, no, it's in a canon that he gets snippy about, like, saying, oh, it's not mind reading, it's blah 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 blah, you know, yeah. Anyway. Mr. Y explained in a slightly... Okay.
Mr. Y explained in a slightly foreign accent. The original versions of the memory charm and the false memory charm are both 300 years old, and they can both be overcome in relatively relatively easily through things like through things like legitimacy and rememberals. But there's no fucking character to this voice. That can be both overcome. He says like a total of like 10 fucking words in the movies, right? Like I can't, like I would probably need to find the actor in like other things. But I think he kind of just says like, you know, blah blah blah, but you can't deny he's got style. I thought might be his only line. I don't think he has more than that line in the books either, actually. Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah.
His death, the ministry has fallen. The original versions of the memory charm and the false memory charm are both 300 years old, and they can both be overcome. Relatively easily through things like legitimacy and rememberals. The ministry banned all further private research into memory-altering charms, but later developed improved versions of the original two for official government use. You have to be licensed by the ministry to learn them, and you have to swear magical oaths, limiting your ability to use them and making it nearly impossible for you to teach others who are not licensed. The memory lock charm cannot be broken by any known means except by knowing the password, and pursuant to the oath I swore when I learned it, I cannot use that charm against any other wizard or witch unless they consent or else pursuant to a judicial decree from the Wizengamot. Otherwise, the spell fails to complete itself. Mr. X here has already consented to obliviation after this session, but for your benefit, he'll repeat the oath before we start.
Probably good for a placeholder at least. I might warm up to it.
Harry blinked. Does this sort of thing happen often?
You'd be surprised, said Mr. X. You'd be surprised, said Mr. X in a silky voice.
Silky, that's not silky.
You'd be surprised, said Mr. X in a silky voice. In the wizarding world, it's quite common to learn something you shouldn't, and then have the memory erased for your own protection or that of others. The Unspeakables are all well trained in self-obliviation for that purpose.
What I could probably do is do that voice, but also, like, give it the subtle inflection, well, not subtle, but, like, give it the inflection of a Beast Wars Megatron. that might be too obvious, but we'll find out.
Harry shuddered a bit at that. Once again, he was reminded of what a strange world he had entered, one where people sometimes felt the need to give themselves amnesia in order to forget dangerous truths. Mr. Y nodded at Mr. X, who held his wand out at... Mr. Y nodded at Mr. X, who held out his wand and said, I freely consent to the obliviation of my memories of all events that occur, all statements made, and all memories observed in this room for the next hour. So mote it be.
So, I don't think that's too close to Lucius.
Mr. X's wand glowed softly for a moment. Mr. Y then moved behind Mr. X so that neither Harry nor Artie could see his wand movements, and he said an incantation too soft for Harry to hear. A violet light briefly shone from Mr. X's eyes, and Mr. Y nodded to Artie that the spell had taken hold properly. Okay, Harry. If he gets on early, pull that cord on the wall to ring the bell downstairs. Otherwise, we'll be back in an hour. The two men left, and Mr. X gestured for Harry to sit at the... The two men left, and Mr. X gestured for Harry to sit at the table across from him. "Before we begin, Mr. Potter, what training have you had? A tutor, or just books?"
Just books. And I've read all of Most Hidden Art, and the first few chapters of Pathway of the Mind. That one's kind of hard to understand.
It's also kind of illegal to own, so don't get caught with it. There are no criminal penalties, but the fine is several thousand galleons, and you'll be on a ministry watch list for the rest of your life.
Harry gulped and nodded at the other man.
What the hell kind of Christmas present did Blaze give me? He thought to himself. Now then, having read Most Hidden Art, I assume you understand the basic principle of clearing the mind.
In the abstract, but none of the examples in the book really seem to get the point across.
Unsurprising, I suppose. It is a very old and traditional text. Aegis Mentalis explains the principles involved in a more approachable manner, if you can find a copy of that. But it too is banned by the ministry. To greatly oversimplify things, clearing your mind means achieving a state in which you have no conscious thoughts at all,
so that an intruding legitimens has nothing to hang on to and use as a frame of reference for future intrusion. A true thoughtless state is extremely difficult to maintain unless you undertake an intensive study of Zen meditation or something similar. But is such not truly necessary? But such is not truly necessary to maintain reliable occlumency shields capable... But such is not truly necessary to maintain reliable occlumency shields capable of resisting legitimacy. All that is required
is that you be able to sense an intruding mind and then reflexively suppress all thought, thus expelling the intruder. Now let's try a simple approach. Can you think of any repetitive activity you have engaged in for long periods of time? Neither a pleasant one nor an unpleasant one, but merely one where you are likely to lose track of time.
Harry thought for a moment, and recalled seeing Petunia's pitiful attempts at gardening earlier.
My relatives used to make me do all their gardening all summer long. Weeding is like that, boring but not unpleasant. A few times I was surprised at how long I'd spent pulling weeds out from among the rose bushes after zoning out.
Mr. Rax nodded.
Good, let us start with that. I will attempt to read your memories. You will hopefully recognize my efforts when you start to think about things that are not germane to our present circumstance. Understand that I will, for the time being, be extremely obvious in my efforts. A skilled legitimens can subtly guide your thoughts.
Yeah.
A skilled legitimens can subtly guide your thoughts so that you will recall the memories he wishes to see without you noticing anything is amiss. Our goal for future sessions is for you to become able to sense intrusions with increasing subtlety. Also, I will be using both wand and incantation today. Be advised that a fifth level adept at legitimacy can work the magic both wordlessly and wordlessly. So you must ever be on your guard whenever someone you do not trust makes eye contact with you.
(Clears throat) Harry nodded. Privately, he wondered how long it would take him to become insanely paranoid and whether that was, in fact, the natural state of an Occlumens. Now, as soon as you realize that you are thinking of things you do not wish to think about, focus your mind on that sensation of thoughtlessness you feel. Focus your mind on that sensation of thoughtlessness you feel when deeply immersed in your gardening. I apologize in advance, but in order to most effectively evaluate you, I must focus on the memories that you find most traumatic, most painful, or most private. It is for that reason that I have agreed to obliviation at the conclusion of this session. Now, Legilimens. Harry was startled by Mr. X's tone of voice when he barked out the incantation. For some reason it reminded him of how Vernon Dursley shouted at him when he'd been 6 years old and had accidentally spilled bacon grease on Vernon. The wretched muggle had been furious. He'd grabbed Harry by the arm and yanked him towards his cupboard so forcefully that there was a loud snap, followed by a scream of agony from the boy. To this day, he could still clearly recall the pain of a broken arm. Vernon and Petunia argued for several minutes about whether it was necessary to take Harry to the emergency room or not, with Vernon inclined to just throw him in the cupboard and see how he looked after a few days. Petunia, however... Harry inhaled sharply. Why am I thinking about that? As he continued to look into Mr. X's eyes, he was astonished and frightened to realize how powerful a Legilimens he was when he didn't have the option of just avoiding eye contact. He took a slower breath and then focused his mind on the peace and serenity he felt when he was immersed in his gardening. It took him a minute or so to reliably focus on the gardening sensation, during which time he faltered repeatedly as Mr. X caused him to remember painful or unpleasant memories of Petunia shouting at him over his gardening efforts, memories which then led inexorably to even worse memories before Harry realized what was happening and redoubled his efforts to keep Mr. X out. Finally, after what seemed like an eternity, but was actually less than 10 minutes, Mr. X waved his wand in front of Harry's face and ended the spell. All right, first the good news. While it took you several minutes to realize that I was actively drawing out the memory of when your uncle broke your arm, on my subsequent attempts, you reacted much more readily. You were able to establish a clear mind relatively quickly, and by the end, you were able to maintain it for a full minute, resisting all my attempts to read you during that time. And the bad news? What you just experienced was my absolute lowest level of mental power, and I was deliberately targeting memories that you would normally suppress, which only made it easier to resist me. Had I applied my full power, you would not have been able to block me at all, and had I exercised any degree of discretion, you would likely never have even noticed my presence. Oh, said Harry somewhat dejectedly. Do not give up, though, Mr. Potter. I am, after all, a 7th-level adept at Legilimency, and you are not likely to encounter many Legilimens with my skill. I definitely think you have potential as an Occlumens. Unfortunately, save for the rare prodigy, Occlumency is simply something that takes time and effort, usually years of both. To have come as far as you have before reaching the age of twelve is quite an achievement and a testament to your dedication. Now let us try again. Legilimens. Legilimens. With that, the lesson continued for another 40 minutes, at the end of which, Mr. X provided Harry with a headache relief potion. He then went over a number of mental exercises that he wanted Harry to practice several times a day for the next 2 weeks, after which they would meet again. Two final matters, Mr. Potter. First, are you aware of the fact that you have several gaps in your memory? Are you aware of the fact that you have several gaps in your memory? Not abbreviations, as I suspect you still retain access to the memories in question. Rather, they are all very high-level memory blocks designed to obscure the memories from legitimacy. All of them seem to start when you enter a particular corridor in your dormitory, and which end as you exit it into the common room. Harry stiffened. Mr. X was talking about the Prince's Lair. Yes, Mr. X, I'm aware of those blocks. They're not something you need to worry about. I see, very well. Secondly, I have a favor to ask. Mr. X suddenly looked down at his hands, which were tightly folded on the table. It was the first bit of real emotion the man had shown all afternoon. From your memories, I now know that he who must not be named survived, to some extent, the events of 1981, and that he seeks to become fully resurrected. Harry was quite shocked at Mr. X's words. He hadn't even noticed when those memories were drawn forth. In a few moments, Mr. X continued, that knowledge will be taken from me until such time as you... That knowledge will be taken from me until such time as you use the restoration phrase to restore my memories, if you ever choose to do so. I ask you. The man suddenly looked up at Harry with an... The man suddenly looked up at Harry with an anguished expression. No, I beg you. If you ever learn that he is close to bodily resurrection, please restore my memories of your encounter with him. I have a family. A wife and two children. With enough warning, I can get them out of the country if... Harry interrupted. How do I set the restoration phrase? You say, Celeverimus, and then whatever word or phrase you wish to use, Mr. Potter. Once set, you can relay it verbally or even in writing, provided you make it clear the message is from you. Celeverimus, Voldemort is back. Celeverimus, Voldemort is back. Celeverimus, Voldemort is back. Mr. X stiffened as the magic settled over him. Thank you, Mr. Potter. Thank you, Mr. X. Moments later, Artie and Mr. Y re-entered, and Mr. X rose. My work here is done. We will meet again in 2 weeks' time. He nodded at Mr. Y, who pulled out his wand and cast the second part of the memory block charm. Mr. X looked around in confusion for a few seconds. Then he pulled out a pocket watch and checked the time. He shook his head. That will never not be disturbing to me. Until next time, gentlemen. With that, Mr. X and Mr. Y left. Harry sat back down with a thoughtful look on his face. Any problems, Harry? Asked Artie. Not with the lesson, Artie. He hesitated. Are you an Occlumence? One good enough to keep my secrets? I've had Occlumency training. I'm probably close to being a fourth-level adept. But it doesn't matter for your secrets, because I swore the solicitor's oath to you. I can't help you conceal a crime and am duty-bound to inform the authorities if you tell me you're planning to commit one. Other than that, anything you tell me is covered by magical Other than that, Other than that, anything you tell me is covered by magical client confidentiality and can't be revealed by legitimacy or Veritaserum. So what's on your mind?
Harry considered whether to reveal to the man that Voldemort lived. Finally, he decided that he was not ready to reveal that. Not even to his solicitor. But there were other steps he could take.
How much is a pensive, Artie? I have some personal memories that I'd like to leave with you. Memories I want locked away unless I tell you to review them, or unless something happens to me. Can we do that?
Artie's eyes shot up in surprise.
Of course. And you don't even need to buy a pensive. The goblins came through with the asset list, and you already own one. A good one, complete with a shrinking enchantment, so it's easy to transport.
I'll get it from the vault and have it for you by next week.
You can copy the memories you want then, and I'll put them in a safe place.
Thanks, Artie.
Harry looked at his watch. It's late. I'd better get home. You and me both, Harry. Elizabeth always has a fit when I work through dinner. She'd be even worse if she knew work consisted of sitting downstairs having a few pints with Mr. Y while we waited for you to finish your session.
Harry laughed.
So I'm starting wand training with this Tonks person on Saturday morning, right? Where are we meeting?
Artie pulled out some parchment and jotted down the address to a building further down Diagon Alley, which was home to a local dueling club. There was a large room with magically reinforced walls that could resist damaging spellfire. Harry smiled. Damaging spellfire was one of his favorite phrases.
July 1992. By 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon, Harry had changed his mind and decided that damaging spellfire was actually one of his least favorite phrases, a conclusion he reached while lying flat on his back in the dueling room and wondering if any parts of him were still on fire. He'd arrived that morning at 10 o'clock, as per Artie's arrangements. Tonks seemed very serious at first, mainly because it was her first teaching experience and, like most Hufflepuffs, she was earnest and conscientious to a fault. Accordingly, the first 2 hours were spent on nothing but healing and shielding spells, with a particular emphasis on Renovate, Episki, and Protego. This was after she presented Harry with an emergency portkey to St. Mungo's that she'd insisted Artie provide in case anything went really bad. At noon, Harry treated Tonks to lunch at the Leaky Cauldron, and she began to loosen up a bit. She admitted to being a bit nervous around Harry due to more... She admitted to being a bit nervous around Harry due to more than her lack of teaching experience. Although she knew Harry was on the outs with his family, he was still the eldest son of James Potter, who was a senior Auror and would likely be supervising her at some point. She had been a little leery of getting caught up in the Potter family drama, but she also wanted income of her own, as she was a Hogwarts graduate and felt uncomfortable still relying on her parents for spending money. Harry assured her that all of his tutoring was kept confidential and that James Potter would never find out from him that she was his tutor. By dessert, she'd even admitted 2 personal secrets to him. First, she was a metamorphmagus with the power to change her own appearance at will, a talent she'd manifested since early childhood. She even showed off for Harry by briefly turning her hair bubblegum pink. That was what clinched her position at the Auror Academy. She'd wanted to be an Auror anyway, but there was an unofficial government policy that all but required known... known metamorphmagi to work for the government in some capacity. The other secret was that she and Harry were distant relatives. Her mother was a private healer named Andromeda Tonks, née Black, and Harry's late grandmother, and Harry's late grandmother Doria Black was Andromeda's great-aunt. She admitted when asked that she was a cousin to Sirius Black, but claimed that she never knew him, as she'd only been a small child when he went to prison. She indicated that her mother had... She indicated that her mother had been on the outs with the Black family due to marrying a Muggleborn, and she didn't think Andromeda had seen Sirius in years at the time. And she didn't think Andromeda had seen Sirius in years at the time of his arrest. After lunch, the two finally got down to combat magic, which was what Harry most wanted to learn. She gave him the usual lectures about how he shouldn't be dueling in the... She gave him the usual lectures about how he shouldn't be dueling in the Hogwarts corridors, and he reassured her that he merely had a strong interest in dueling competitive... and the DADA teachers at Hogwarts were traditionally of poor quality, to which she could only agree. He did not mention that the last one had been an agent for a still-living Voldemort. And so the two spent the next 3 hours covering a variety of second- and third-year combat charms and hexes. Expelliarmus, Defendo, and Immobilis were obviously useful, but Harry was intrigued by the possibilities of Depulso and Depugno. The former was the knockback jinx, which could fling the target back a good 10 to 20 feet with considerable force. The Epugno hex was combined with targeting words and would cause the target to attack an enemy. The Epugno hex was combined with targeting words and would cause the target to attack an enemy of the wizard's choice. For example, Avis could be used to summon a flock of birds, but Avis Epugno would cause those birds to swarm against an enemy. But best of all, Tonks taught Harry how to perform Serpensortia, the snake summoning charm. I'm going to get another take of that with Avis. For example, Avis could be used to summon a flock of birds, but Avis Epugno would cause those birds to swarm against an enemy. But best of all, Tonks taught Harry how to perform Serpensortia, the snake summoning charm. I figured as a Slytherin, this might be a useful charm to know.
No, that's not right. That's not right at all. That's not how she talks in the slightest. Okay. I figured as a Slytherin, this might be a useful charm. This might be a useful charm to know. No. Okay.
I figured as a Slytherin, this might be a useful charm to know. She said, yeah, I like that. She said with a wink. Indeed, Harry said mildly, while itching to see how the conjured snake reacted to partial tongue. Combining Serpensortia with a Pugno would cause the conjured serpents to attack Harry's enemy without further direction from him, but he suspected that any snakes he conjured could do a lot more than that. Their lesson ended at 4, at which point Tonks cast the notification spell that informed the Ministry that Harry was once more forbidden to use magic. She also took back the portkey, as Harry was not old enough to possess it without Ministry approval, which Hestia was currently trying to get. Then Tonks headed home while Harry spent some time exploring Diagon Alley. He made a brief foray into Floris and Blotts and ordered some books on dueling and defense training that would be owl-delivered the following week. He also took in an early supper at the Leaky Cauldron before heading home on the night bus, which dropped him off at a petrol station about 3 blocks from the Dursley residence. Harry was quite pleased with how the day had gone and was looking forward to an hour or so of television followed by an early bedtime. Naturally, that was when things went pear-shaped. Just as Harry was about to turn off the sidewalk and into the Dursleys' driveway,
There was a sudden flash of light, accompanied by a loud pop, and the boy was knocked flat on his back. He blinked his eyes.